Members present are Representative Prochot, Representative Szymanski, Representative Cotton, Representative Ping-Elberry, and myself. We have a topic up for, again today, Senate Bill 309. We have an teleconference. Yeah, we are in teleconference. Excuse me. We have just convened the meeting, and we have Senate Bill 309 up for testimony today. We have a number of people in Anchorage waiting to testify, and a number of people here in here at Juneau to testify. Kenny Brown has some information, which I'll pass out, which is some proposed amendments, and we have also Larry Vavra to testify. Would you care to lead off with the members haven't seen these proposed amendments that you have, so I'll pass them out. Kay, you can go ahead and
this is not our proposal. We're responding to you on that, and I prefer that's not part of my
okay
testimony.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Kay Brown, Director of the Division of Oil and Gas for the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. The department supports Senate Bill 309 in the version now before you, which is the Senate Rules Committee version of the bill. I believe the members are generally familiar with the issues and with the background. I would call your attention to the summary and the sectional analysis that the department prepared earlier. I'd like to briefly speak to two proposed amendments to the rules version. On page 3 of the bill, line 4, in the section that deals with the North Slope gas line proposal, we would propose to insert the words Alaska North Slope in lieu of the words Prudhoe Bay Reservoir. This, our initial suggestion had been to use the words Alaska North Slope, and we believe that was changed by legislative drafting because Alaska North Slope was not defined, and Prudhoe Bay Reservoir is not broad enough to cover the situation that is likely to exist, and therefore we believe it would be logical to have this apply to North Slope, any North Slope gas. Secondly,
Excuse me, Kate. Your proposal then is to delete Prudhoe Bay Reservoir and insert Alaska North Slope?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. In addition, we've proposed a definition of Alaska North Slope gas leases to address the concern expressed by the legislative drafter when he made it be Prudhoe Bay. So I'm referring to a memo that stated March 7th that I believe was distributed at your meeting last week from Mark Wooster to Ned Farquhar, where these proposals are set out in writing.
Okay, it should be in your packets. Okay.
Thank you. The second amendment relates to the Alaska mental health lands. The change we recommend would create an exception from the operation of the Act with regard to leases on mental health and school land. This is necessary because implementation of one of the provisions of the bill would create the possibility of less income than would be obtained under management designed to maximize revenues if the discretion were exercised to make a sale below value, and implementation of the other sections of the bill could possibly create less income. So we believe the results would violate DNR's fiduciary obligations as applied to mental health land, may also violate a duty as to school land. And we put this proposal forward at the recommendation of the Department of Law, which believes that it is necessary to comply with a recent Supreme Court decision about mental health lands.
What's the amendment?
I beg your pardon?
Is there an amendment? Are you giving us an amendment for that?
Yes, sir. It's in a memo dated March 7 from Mark Wooster to Ned Farquhar. It was distributed last week, but the time was getting late, and I did not speak to it at that time. But it was before you, and it's at the bottom of that page, sir, at a new Section 7. So, in summary, we believe the bill would resolve a dispute that has arisen over the value of the state's gas in a responsible way that would benefit Alaska consumers and also would provide some additional certainty that would help in financing the North Slope gas pipeline. And we urge your favorable consideration of the amendments and of the bill.
Okay, just for clarification here, the definition that you have here, where would this be? I guess we can take this up with drafting, but where would that be included in the bill then?
You'll see now on page 3, line 18, it says in this subsection, and there is already a definition there, price for the gas established in the gas sales contracts. Our proposal would add another definition right there, so we would have a 1 and a 2. So it's on page 3, line 18, is where it would be the appropriate place to insert a definition.
The chair would entertain a motion to adopt those proposed amendments.
Well, there are three amendments here, basically. Is that right?
There's actually two amendments, Representative Pignalberry, and this one, well, and a definition. So, yes, technically, I guess you're correct. Representative Frischel?
Mr. Chairman, is the CS before? Are we amending the bill directly here?
The CS, that's correct.
We have a CS
for Senate Bill 309 rules.
We have the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the amendment contained in the memorandum dated March 19th from Mark Wooster to
March 7th. Well,
March 19th.
Do you want me to go ahead and speak to the March 19th?
What's the difference?
Well, this.
Mr. Chairman, yesterday we were provided by your office a copy of some comments put forward by Yukon Pacific that does address Section BB of the bill. The memo Representative Pershaw refers to is a suggestion on our part as to if the committee felt that it did want to address the issue raised by Yukon Pacific as what our thinking is as how that might be done in a more appropriate manner.
Okay.
But I really believe it would be appropriate to have Yukon Pacific speak to that before we take up what the solution could possibly be to it.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I didn't read, as someone's Representative Pignalberry said, there are several amendments in the same thing, and I only meant to reference, I don't know how we're going to do this, just reference the Alaska North Slope substitution amendments with the corresponding definition.
That's what I'd like to entertain a motion to take care of.
That was my intent. I didn't realize there were several amendments in one piece of paper here.
Well,
Mr. Chairman,
just for clarification, what I was entertaining, Representative Frischel, yes, was the amendments, the housekeeping amendments that were proposed,
yes,
on March 7th, and there's three of them included,
right,
in that.
I understand.
Is that your motion?
Yes.
Including the health plans.
Yes.
Is there objection to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that the question be divided. There are three distinct amendments on the page, and because one of them presents a problem, I'd like to be able to address that amendment separately, and I'd ask that
I have no objection to dividing the question. If the maker of the motion has no objection to that, that's fine. Why don't we take them up individually then? The first...
Mr. Chairman, I'll do it individually if you'd like me to walk through. Move that on page 3, line 4... delete the words Prudhoe Bay Reservoir and insert Alaska North Slope. Ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, then that amendment is adopted. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, is, now this part isn't right now, right?
Yeah, but the definition. Page 2, line 8,
exactly. Page
3,
line
18.
No.
Same motion.
Yeah.
No,
page, it would.
3, line 18.
It's page 3, line 18, I believe.
Well,
he got the same motion he just made on page 2, line 8, Mr. Chairman. If I have the same copy, you can do everybody else.
Right. Okay. Then I would move and ask unanimous consent that on page 2, line 8, we delete the words Prudhoe Bay Reservoir and insert the words Alaska North Slope Gas Leases. Ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, then that amendment is also adopted.
I'm just having trouble finding.
Now, I think Representative Cotton, my suggestion on this would be to propose a conceptual amendment to include this, and we'll make sure in drafting it gets incorporated into the body of the BB.
Yeah. Okay, then I would propose that, Mr. Chairman, on page 3, starting on line 18 through lines 21, delete all material and insert the language that's contained in the March 7th memo, beginning with in this subsection, and then it lists two definitions, whereas current language has one definition. This is it would be a new way of putting it. So you would just add the new language and redraw the existing language so that it would be definition number 1 and number 2. Asking unanimous consent.
Okay.
Oh,
you're on page 3.
Right, if you look at the telecopy.
You're deleting section 3?
No.
No.
Peace.
I'm just making this other amendment here, Mr. Sun. And in the existing language, between line 18 and 21, this would redraw that language to allow two definitions, as opposed to the one that's in there now and isn't itemized.
Okay, so you're on page 3, line 18 through 21.
Yes.
Okay. I'll withdraw my objection.
Okay, is there any objection, further objection to adopting the proposed language?
Mr. Chairman, I assume this is the one that Mr. Knellberg is going to object to, but I'll place the motion on the table that we add a new section 7.
Just a second. If there is no objection to that amendment, then that amendment is also adopted. Okay, thank you, Representative Cotton. Go ahead.
I would move the language for the new section 7.
Okay, is there... do you have objection then to that language being adopted?
Yes.
Adding a new section 7?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I want to object to bring to the committee's attention the fact that there are about five bills going through the committee system right now on the subject of mental health lands that is a very significant and important issue. And how the land transactions are handled in this interim period between now and the time that a settlement is reached, which may be a year from now, in the method and location of the decision-making body is still up in the air. And as a matter of fact, the other body has indicated that they will not approve. They've already rejected legislation last week that transferred some mental health lands for a critical habitat area because it said they will not deal with it until the...
This is the moderator in Anchorage. We're not hearing any of the testimony right now. I'm sorry.
Until this issue is settled. But most importantly, I would like to know whether or not the Mental Health Alliance or the Mental Health Association, which are the two client groups involved, have been contacted as to their consent for the language. Even though they have consented on some of the other language in different legislation, the other bodies saw fit not to to move that. But at least I think the mode that we're trying to establish now with them is to get out of the adversarial arena of the courts and show that there's some cooperation between the executive branch, the legislature, and them, and to make an amendment that deals with mental health land that they have not been consulted about, I think would set us back with that relationship.
First of all, I really would like to take testimony. If there's going to be considerable debate on this, then I'd rather have us hold off on it. But I don't want to withdraw people's comments. And I believe Representative Cotton was first, and then Representative Pershaw.
I'll just suggest that the purpose of amendment, the Third Amendment, adding the new Section 7, would be to protect the interests of the two groups you mentioned.
Representative Pershaw.
That was my comment also. That was the intent of the amendment.
Representative Szymanski.
Well, are we going to, let me ask you this, if Mark Wooster talk about this?
They're saying they want to be consulted before any transactions occur.
Mark, are you on the other line?
Leaves them status quo. Leaves them out of the deal.
Yes, I'm here at Anchorage.
Well, Mark, this is Mike Szymanski. Would you give me an explanation on this, because indirectly Representative Penalberry touched on a very sensitive area to me, because I've had legislation in recent weeks affected by this whole mental health lands position. And apparently, because of what I understand to be a position taken by the other body, the Senate, that no legislation will be dealt with that either positively or negatively impacts. They want to take a neutrality position with regard to mental health lands. Why don't you explain to me this amendment?
Well, that is exactly the intent of the amendment, which is to leave the mental health lands as they are, unaffected. You know, everything will be according to the leases, as opposed to any new legislation, which would create new powers to essentially amend the leases, which is the way I view the SB 309. But in any event, it is neutral, and it's the genesis of this, in answer to Representative McNaughbury's concern, was a comment from Jim Costin, who has obviously been very much involved in promoting the mental health plan issue. And he, as I understand it, although I haven't had a formal discussion with him, this amendment was announced at the Royalty Board meeting last week, and my reaction was that he was very pleased with the announcement rather than concerned with it.
Thank you, Mr. Wooster. Further questions?
With that, I guess I'd like to ask then, what is the potential impact of your negotiations with the utilities based on this? Have you had any indication that it affects one way or the other, the negotiations agreements or anything?
Are you referring to the mental health section we're talking about?
Exactly.
Well, it wouldn't impact any existing contracts, because there's no production from any mental health land lease at this point. This is merely a precautionary amendment to deal with a hypothetical situation in the future.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased. My question was, had the mental health community's representatives been contacted about this language? Mr. Gottstein is the attorney for the interveners in the case, and I'm glad that he's had a chance to see it. The other half of the litigants is the Mental Health Alliance, represented by Mr. Walker. And I wonder if he has had a chance to see the language, because I would not expect any objection, but unless the bill is going to move today, and I understand that's not the plan, why don't we just wait another day and give them a chance to see it? It's just to make clear that no one is trying to end run what has been painstakingly been developing here over a non-adversarial relationship on this issue.
Mr. Ping-Alvary will be glad to talk to Mr. Walker.
We'll hold the bill over at Marco's request.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can just get it clarified, the issue on the mental health line, Marco, is that this bill here is a deliberate attempt to sell the value of a state resource at less than market value, and mental health people are concerned about giving away something for less than market value.
Go back, it's a trap. Go back, it's a trap.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd rather not discuss how they might view it. I want to make sure they've been consulted about the language rather than try to guess whether or not they would concur. I would expect them to, but I would like to extend them that courtesy.
Representative Pinalver, do you maintain your objection to the motion?
Yes.
Is there further discussion on the motion to adopt a new Section 7?
Mr. Chairman, if you would prefer, I would withdraw the motion, but it's up to you.
I have no problems with the motion taking a vote on it.
Yes.
Further discussion? Okay, we'll take a vote then. Representative Prochot?
We're voting on whether to put this in the bill?
Right. Do you wish that we'd hold off on it?
I thought that's what you decided to do.
If that's the wish of the committee, we can hold off adopting that. That's fine with me.
Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, I'd appreciate just getting some testimony and work on markup the bill after the testimony comes.
Fine. I really thought we weren't going to spend as much time on this one section as we have already. So let's do that. Fine.
Chairman,
you want to
withdraw the motion?
Thank you.
I withdraw my vote.
You're with me. Representative Sun?
Yeah, in terms of testimony and question and answers, do you want us to question the witnesses as they're testifying, or are we going to wait till they all get through and then offer some questions?
Let's just take them each one as they come.
Yeah, I have a question for Kay Brown.
Go ahead.
I know we've been working on amending a section here, but my question goes to the basis of why the section is even in the bill, and why is it critical or so important that we have to deal with the North Slope gas issues in this bill here when we're primarily the bill is set up to deal with rail belt gas proposals. I don't understand that, the reason why it's even in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill, when it left the Senate Resources Committee, did, as you say, deal only with consumer issues. I think the Senate Rules Committee was acting in response to points put forward by the Yukon Pacific Group, which is trying to establish a gas line from the North Slope. And one point that they made that does make the connection is that the certainty they need to go forward with their project would have been accomplished by resolution of the litigation in court, probably prior to the time that they needed a definite answer, because the bill would have the effect of short-circuiting that and ending the litigation by a settlement. The answer that they needed would not have been forthcoming, and for that reason they suggested to the Senate Rules Committee that this should be addressed. The commissioner at that time said it was our preference that we would want to see that addressed in a separate vehicle. But we did provide some language for the Senate's consideration, which they chose to adopt.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't really understand gas contracts, and if this is a certainty argument on the state's royalty portion of North Slope Gas, why is it so much uncertain than the sale of the gas anyway? It seems to me that most gas sales, I may be ignorant on the issue, but on a worldwide basis are based on some other fluctuating deal, either number two diesel or price of BTUs and some type of energy that's going to move up and down. There isn't going to be long-term certainty of a fixed price anyway.
I imagine the representative from Yukon Pacific could answer that better than I. I agree that the certain uncertainty created by the lease form and the valuation of the state share is probably small in relation to the uncertainties of energy prices in general.
Mr. Chairman?
But I would defer to Yukon Pacific to explain why they feel that this amendment is needed and why they have sought it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pinalver.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think a short, slightly different answer to Representative Sun's question as to why North Slope gas is included in this bill, which we thought originally was just about Cook Inlet gas, is that the bill and the statute do not distinguish between North Slope gas and Cook Inlet gas. And we're talking about royalty valuation methods. We have to have the same language and the same statute that concerns both. So while we originally started out just thinking it applied to Cook Inlet gas, some of the amendments made along the way turned out to be bad for the interests of North Slope or potential North Slope gas activity. So we had to go back in and correct it, and that's what this is about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for record, I don't really kind of agree with that. I mean, we do make an exception between BTUs, the type of BTU that comes out of the oil ground in the form of gas, and the type of BTU that comes out of the form, ground in form of oil. We're making a distinction in this bill between gas and oil. So I don't know why we have to worry about gas and gas. So I'll wait till I get Yukon Pacific up here to ask them their reason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You might stick around. There might be other questions. We have, I believe we have one person from out of town, and I'd like to take him first, if you'd like, and then I'd like to take Yukon Pacific. Larry Markley, would you like to testify now? Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Markley. I'm Director of Government and Environmental Affairs for Chugach Electric Association in Anchorage. I will keep my remarks very brief. I just would like to say that we have seen the amendments that have been proposed here today, and Chugach, by extension, the utilities, the other utilities that we serve at wholesale, have no objection to those. The bill that came out of the Senate Resources Committee would protect the interests of our consumers. This bill protects the interests of our consumers, which represent, as you, most of you know, about 3/4 of the population of the state. Pardon me. And these amendments wouldn't affect those interests.
Thank you, Larry. Any questions for the witness?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Markley, can you just, I think what I just heard you say was the original bill protected your consumers' interests, and so does the bill as amended. What happens either under the original bill and under this bill when your contracts with the producers expire? What would have happened with the original Senate Bill 309 in terms of the pricing mechanism? And then what do you envision happening with the bill as it is now?
Well, the answer is those in the order that you posed them. Under the bill as it exists now, and I might say that when I said original bill, I meant to say the bill that emerged from the Senate Resources Committee. Certainly the original version of 309 also would have addressed our issues, our concerns. Under the current version of 309, which we support, any new contract we renegotiate in the Cook, not necessarily at Beluga, but anywhere in the Cook Inlet Basin, where there is a long-term contract, that contract would determine the royalty value, and that the Commissioner of Natural Resources would be disposed to accept that.
And
I'm sorry.
The original bill?
This would have been the situation under any version of the bill, from the very first concept to what we have now. And that's what we have been and remain after.
Then finally, you would not be hurt by the original bill.
That's correct. We wouldn't be hurt by any version that we've seen.
Thank you.
Let the record show that Representative Pierce has joined the committee. You have a question? Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Markley, what is Chugach presently today paying for their gas?
About 26 cents per MCF. We have not made any move to reimburse the demands the state made last March, effective April 15th. We're still paying 26 cents.
And that price will only raise if, as I understand it, under the new agreement.
If the bill that's here before us today, in which we support, is enacted, existing gas contracts, the price for the royalty share, not the other 7/8, but actually 60% of the 8 that's state royalty gas, that price for those purposes, royalty purposes, would increase to 75 cents per MCF, retroactive to last April 15th, 1985.
And if this legislation does not pass,
all bets are off. The settlement on the relative to the royalty pricing of the existing Beluga gas is contingent on passage of 309.
What would happen? Have you dropped your court case?
No, litigation is still pending. That would all be part and parcel of the things that occur subsequent to the passage of the bill.
You won't drop that litigation until the bill passes?
We have no intent to do that.
And if the bill doesn't pass, you will continue with it?
That would be a decision that obviously we have to make at that time, yeah.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. So that's kind of an interesting approach. I hadn't really looked at it that way before. So therefore, if the legislature didn't pass 309, you would have to go back to court, and if you won, you'd only pay 26 cents.
Yes, that's correct.
But, so therefore, I'm just looking at it, 75 cents is almost three times 26 cents, so that means you think you have only a 1 in 4 chance of winning the court case if you were to go to court?
Well, I've not been privy to any risk analysis. I can only tell you that's a negotiated price. It's 75 cents. It's about three times what we're paying now. But remember, it's only on a slice of the gas that we buy from Beluga, not on all of it.
I understand all
it's
that.
It's a lot less than 205, which the state asked for a year ago.
I just appreciate the representative's line of questioning. Thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions?
Well, one more. I want to clarify something that Representative Cotton just said. Larry, when Representative Cotton said if you go to court and you don't win, then you would be paying what? I think your answer was,
well. Excuse me, this is Moderator in Anchorage. We're not hearing the testimony right now.
Marco, you're being too soft-spoken this afternoon.
Well, I'm trying to make sure that we have fleshed out each of the options that Chugach faces, depending on whether or not the legislation passes. If the legislation passes as is, Chugach will be paying 75 cents an MCF in accordance with the settlement agreement.
On the existing contracts.
On the existing contracts.
Correct.
All right. If the legislation does not pass on the existing contracts, would you go back to 26 cents, or would you go back to the $1.95 or something that the state is going to...
Well, if the in the event the legislation might not pass, we would be back. We are in court, and we would remain in court, and it would be a Chugach decision whether to pursue it in court. And to date, we've not been inclined to settle that court case.
All right. So, if the legislation does not pass, then you would go back to paying the royalty based on the 26 cents, unless the court upheld the DNR action to require you to pay royalty on the basis of the long-term contract or of the long-term, the highest price in the field.
Let me say that if I follow you, in the event the legislation didn't pass, the state's demand for gas at 205, royalty gas, would continue, and it would be, in my opinion, a Chugach to convince the court that that's not right. And in the absence of us prevailing, I guess we would, and if we fought it all the way up and lost it, we'd be stuck paying what the state asked for. I'm sure it's not anything we're going to drop lightly, and I'm sure that if it doesn't pass, we'd be back down here again next year.
Thanks.
And very active in the interim.
That's right. What does that mean?
I think we'd maintain the high profile in court in the interim. I think we'd stay in business.
We continue to vigorously support.
Anyway,
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Markley, are you a person who can give us a description of how the federal price or value is set, or should I direct that question to someone else?
I don't believe I'd be the appropriate person if you're talking about the MPGA and impacts, implications there.
Okay, we have a number of people to testify, but I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next we have, I'm going to go to Anchorage and take testimony from Mead Treadwell. Mead, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mead Treadwell. I'm the Vice President and Treasurer of Yukon Pacific Corporation. Mr. Chairman, when I last testified before your committee, Senate Bill 309 had yet to clear the Senate Rules Committee and had yet to go to the floor. And I think that happened during a day of the negotiations that Kay Brown referred to in her earlier testimony. The amendment that did come into Senate Bill 309 made an exception for North Slope gas, similar to the exceptions that had been given the state's regulated utilities at the time prospective gas contracts are made. And I guess we have given a position paper sent to you yesterday, and I believe it's been distributed to committee members, and I'd like to just basically summarize it by saying the following. First, it was our belief that the current leases still state that the price set in a long-term contract is the price the state gets for its royalty gas. Gas producers, and the state in this case is a gas producer, try to get the highest price they can. And at the same time, you can try to get a lot of something or a little of something, but you need to get things started. And when the Beluga contracts were signed, you were getting a transportation system started. That gas on the North Slope has been there since 1968, to our knowledge, and it's been a long time in trying to get it started. And in getting it started, any buyer is going to need to know what the price is, whether they know the absolute price or the relative price through a contract. And all contracts have formulas for price fluctuations if world prices change, if they don't come up with a fixed price like the original Beluga contract is. And I guess I misstated there because that was not even totally a fixed price. The point is that when you make a contract for 7/8 of the gas, the sellers sit down and they say, this is our price. And the last 1/8 of the gas, you also need to sit down and know what your price is. Now, the way the state, as an owner, makes contracts to sell its gas is something that we've looked at very carefully. We are in the process right now of having discussions with the Japanese. There are summits coming up between President Reagan and Prime Minister Nakasone that at least will further the discussions and sales of this gas overseas. And we would like to say that as a state and as a nation, we are ready to sell. It was our belief that as a state, we were ready to sell before this situation came up last year. And so when the situation came up, we supported the original version of Senate Bill 309 that said basically a contract is a contract, and when the producers go out and get the best price, they can, the state goes along with that price. When the language in Senate Bill 309 was changed to say instead the state has the right to go back and change the price and get the highest price for drilling in the field, we then joined the group of people who said this won't work unless you get an exception. Obviously, our hope is that the legislature will see that it has the option to get a higher price midway through a contract by taking its gas in kind and selling it that way. If you do plan to pass out Senate Bill 309, we would like to see it have the language that was inserted in the Senate, I guess in the version that you see, and we would also like to see two other things happen. First, we're not the only people trying to get gas projects started in this state, and we're not. And North Slope Gas is just the beginning. We believe there's very long, strong potential for gas production off state land all over the state of Alaska. And I think the state ought to set up a mechanism for all gas fields that say when producer makes a contract, the commissioner can sign up and join in with that contract on those terms. And so in the memo that we sent to you, we suggested broadening the language to cover all prospective gas contracts and give the commissioner that same flexibility as an owner that the other owners of the gas have. The second consideration we've suggested that you look at, and it's a much more important one specifically for this bill, if you plan to go ahead with this bill, is that it's important to remove the prescription or the prohibition of this kind of flexibility on the part of the commissioner when the sale of the gas is not necessarily through an arm's length contract. And that we would concur with the language in Mark Worcester's memo of today that does not have the Division of Oil and Gas or the administration supporting the change, but that's the kind of language that we would see as necessary. And I can just go along and say that many times you have a producer selling gas to an entity, be it a pipeline or a production facility, that producer himself is an equity owner in. And it was necessary in the oil pipeline, it's probably going to be necessary in a gas pipeline, it was necessary in the Phillips Marathon LNG plant, it was necessary in the Collier Chemical plant. And I think what this bill would do is it would force the state and the prospective promoters of a project to sit down early and agree on where the costs are and where the profits are. And it in effect could avoid some long-term, very expensive, retroactive lawsuits that have come up with major energy projects in this country. The fact that we spent well over the state and the producers spent $100 million arguing about the tax cap tariff might well have been avoided if you'd had somehow a way to sit down and agree on the division of returns beforehand. If this language had been in there, it might well have prevented the same kinds of problems in the other projects. And I think when you take a look at the economics of a gas pipeline project, it's very important to have that stability up front, because a lawsuit the size of $160 million, that's about equal to your operating costs in a year as we look at them now. It may be a little bit less, but you're talking about a lot of money, and you're just not going to be able to afford that kind of thing with the marginal projects coming on. I've been a bit wordy, but just to summarize, we'd like you to stick with the principle that a contract is a contract. If you're not going to stick with the principle, and we are going to pass Senate Bill 309, we'd like you to see them broaden it so that all contracts, the state at least has the right to look at the numbers at the same time everybody else makes investment decisions looking at the numbers, and have the quick flexibility to act in the way deals are made. Thank you.
Representative Pochot had a question. Mr. Treadwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mead, on your second point or your second suggestion for a change regarding the prohibition in the current bill for the consideration of contract price when it involves a less than arm's length transaction, I'm having a hard time visual. I sure recognize the problems that the prohibitions similar to this caused in the original angst pipeline. Of course, then Congress passed a bill to specifically permit owners of the pipeline to represent the similar interests of producers. But in this case, I guess my simplistic image is the Japanese are the buyers, and the producers may very well be the same people as the pipeline people or vice versa, but the contract that we'd be looking at would be between whoever owns the oil as it comes out at Point Gravina or Anchorage or Valdez, and then the other part of the contract party would be the Japanese or somebody buying it. Can you give me another simple example of where that wouldn't be?
It could change hands at the south coast of Alaska, Gravina or Kenai or one of the other alternatives we're looking at, or it could change hands CIF in Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. At the same time, you're really looking at several different entities. You have a group of producers, you have a pipeline company, the pipeline company may also own by an independent group or it could be owned by the buyers and sellers. A lot of those decisions have to do with much greater issues than this royalty issue here today. They have to do with tax depreciation. They have to do with ways companies can absorb the cost of the capital cost. It has to do with demands the bankers make on it. And you're absolutely correct in remembering that probably the most crucial part of the labor package for banks was banks going back to get the waiver for the federal government to allow the producers ownership in that pipeline. What we're saying here is that we don't know that particular aspect of this project as yet, and we may not know it until the very last day. What we'd like to see is the state having the flexibility to sign on to a contract as those negotiations come along, assuming the state is satisfied that if the producers own part of the pipeline and the pipeline is buying the gas at the wellhead, there is not a lot of profit packed in the pipeline to diminish the wellhead price.
I sure agree with you, Mead. Did I understand you to say that you have seen the suggested language to correct that problem in the Mark Worcester memo of March 19, and you do concur in that suggested language?
Yes, I do.
Thanks a lot.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, me, this is Sam Cotton, and I apologize for asking a question on a subject I don't know the answer to, but will the tags line be a common carrier?
Sam, under both state and federal law, you can't get the right of way across public lands unless you are a common carrier.
Public lands meaning what? Just federal lands or state or federal lands?
Both.
Thank you.
President Szymanski.
Trying to think the same thing, how they got the line from Beluga, but I guess they must have bought right away or something. Part of your testimony, I guess what I was kind of curious about, you were talking about broadening the language in here to include, I guess, a more broader policy question, and that was related, I guess, a contract's a contract. Mead, have you drafted specific language?
Mike, I have not drafted specific language. I think that the original version of Senate Bill 309, I think it's comparable bill was 425, and the House would address that issue. I think at the same time, I'd have to go back and look at the bill to see where it was before the so-called NSTAR and Chugach exceptions went in, but there would have been some things you could have done there that probably would have put the state further into the process than it was before this whole thing started, but still left it fairly broad. And that, I believe, was language, I don't have it with me, but I think that was the original language that we gave to the Senate Rules Committee a couple of weeks ago when we were down there for the hearing.
Okay, well, maybe what we can do is, after this hearing or tomorrow, next day, you can either have it telecopied up to me, or I can figure out how to get my staff to get their hands on it, or I'll get a hold of DNR or somebody. But I'm interested in pursuing that.
Representative Szymanski, let me just give the example. A lot of people say that we should wait for the North Slope issue to be resolved until everybody else has done things, and then we can come down and have a great big cocktail party with the legislature and take 2 or 3 years and try to push a big omnibus pipeline bill through. But our general philosophy is to accept on face value what Alaskans are trying to say and trying to do, which is to provide a stable climate for investment. And whenever things come up that are surprises, try to fix the surprises in the same piecemeal fashion they come to us. When we suggest as a little company looking at a broad approach, I think a lot of it comes from just our knowledge of the gas business and the fact that we know that other people also have to make long-term contracts for gas for different reasons. There's an example of somebody on the peninsula who is the only buyer of gas from a field to heat a hothouse. And he may need a long-term contract for a hothouse to get a mortgage to put a hothouse out there where there's no other pipeline. And, And so if he gets a long-term contract for 25 cents, and sooner or later another effort comes along and he'll pay a little bit more for that, he too would have to come down to the legislature and get the same kind of exception. And it's basically looking at the little guy as well as the big guy, as well as the possibility a gas field could be discovered somewhere else besides the Northwest that we look at fracking. Obviously, if we don't ban it, it's not going to kill our project in the way we talked about. But if you are interested in addressing general principle, besides the specific interests of companies we know exist at the time, I think you might want to look at that.
I appreciate it, Mead, and I hope, Mr. Chairman, that we have an opportunity to do some work session on that and go back, and I'm going to pull the original bill. I didn't pull it today, but I will.
Representative Sun had a question. We do have four more people to testify, but also let the record show we've been enjoined by Representative Andre Maru. Representative
Mr. Chairman, perhaps you could enlighten me anyway. What are some of the price terms or the pricing terms of the contracts that you're looking at for the private sale of the gas, and how are they fixed or termed, or are they fixed to some other variable in the energy world, or what's a general accepted pricing philosophy with the sale of gas over the long term?
John, I think maybe a very good example is the way the Phillips contract was signed in 1969, and it had a reopeners. But basically, it was signed at a fixed price with a reopener if the world really changed. And in the mid-70s, when the world really changed, the Japanese came back, and you know, by American terms, they wouldn't have had to because the language was real loose in that contract, but they did come back, and they set the price of the gas that they bought from Alaska at parity, 100% parity, with crude oil prices on a BTU basis as they came into Japan. And so the price of Kenai gas in Japan last month was $4.75 based on that. There was some gas getting a little bit higher price in the market from Indonesia, a little bit over $5, and that was based on a on the same kind of contract, but they were using a different basket of crudes to make that determination. As we look at broadening the market for gas in Japan, and I guess I can say that Japan uses about 6% of its energy supply in natural gas, and the U.S. uses about 26%. And the big difference is not only the time it's had to penetrate the market, but price. Where gas goes into Japan is 100% of oil gas is sold, or just consider the differences. NSTAR is buying its gas for somewhere around $1.92 at some of the higher prices it pays, and the Japanese lowest price is the Alaskan price at $4.75, so that explains the difference. So it is quite possible that in order to expand the market enough to take a big project like the North Slope, a contract might well be signed, and something the Japanese have discussed, at 80% parity with crude. Now, that would still fluctuate as the price of crude goes up and down, but it might be much less. And what we would be doing there is trying to penetrate the industrial market. A third of the gas used in the United States is used in industry, and virtually none of it used in Japan is used in energy. In industry, and it all has to do with price. So, you know, again, here is the example. We might sign a contract for North Slope gas at 80% parity with oil. And then an electric utility might come along and buy an incremental amount of North Slope gas, and they go back and pay the oil 100% parity with oil. And so there you might have a big difference, and unless you have the state going along with the original 80% price, your whole contract's in jeopardy then. Because the state would be insisting on the highest prevailing price from the field.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up, the theory of the uncertainty of the future price of the product prevails underneath that pricing theory. It's the uncertainty of the whatever oil is in this case, so that you have to manufacture that into your uncertainty. I don't think that followed with your hothouse long-term projection analogy, and I guess I can see where if the state was going to, on their 1/8 share, it may, if you're selling at 80% and they want to sell at 100%, wouldn't you know that going in, though, that they were going to sell their royalty share at 100% of parity? I mean, that's a, if they did that from the beginning, they'd do it through the whole contract, and that would be another one of those known variables from the beginning, wouldn't it?
Yeah, except I'm not going to sell 7/8 of that gas for 80% and find a buyer who's going to pay 100%. And I can't put through the same kind of pass-through clause that the producers had with NSTAR and Chugach. That just won't work in the international marketplace. None of our competitors do it, and they all have governments as owners of natural gas, of the natural resources that are every bit as anxious as Alaska to get the highest value return for those resources. The point is that if you found out that, let's just suppose our project went ahead with an 80% contract, and I really don't like to talk those kind of numbers too loudly because we haven't talked that kind of price firmly with the Japanese, but it's in the range of possibility. Suppose we did go ahead with 80%, somebody else could turn around and have an incremental contract at 100. The state always maintains its right to take that gas in kind and turn around and sell it that way. And there's enough other gas up there to make up the volume. But to have a state saying that it wants more for its gas and you can't pass it on, it kind of takes the fun out of selling it because you're selling it for more than you're buying, for less than you're buying it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll hold the rest of my questions.
I would like to take, we've got four more people to testify, and perhaps it would be, in all fairness to those people willing to testify that, or would like to testify, that we should take that testimony and then hold the questions if we could. There's a number of people that have to leave here shortly. So I'd like to take Mr. Teal next in Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, I am Daniel Teal, President of NSTAR. We have the same testimony to give here today that we gave in the Senate. I could read it, and maybe in the interest of time, if it's available there, it's not necessary. I would say that we support the original bill, and we support generally the whole position expressed by Meet Treadwell. We think the contract price on the 7/8 is the value on the 1/8 royalty. There's no way it should be changed. If there are questions, I'm available.
Mr. Teal, we don't have the. We can get that, but we don't have that testimony from in the packets. But we can certainly make that available to the committee members. But I believe there is a question by one of the members of the committee, Representative Sun.
Yeah, Mr. Teal, there was a comment regarding the pipeline and the common carrier status, and I think Mr. Treadwell stated that a pipeline over public land had to be a common carrier, and I'm not sure that that's true. Are the pipelines that NSTAR have, are they common carriers?
No, they are not. The law provides both kinds of answers, but we are not common carrier, and we're authorized under the law to continue operating without common carrier requirements.
Is there any advantage for you to be a common carrier?
No particular advantage. It's not come up. We've not resisted it. We've tried in the past to cooperate with people who want to move gas for them, and we still would. But for our current purposes, it's fine for us to be as we are.
Mr. Taylor, Mike Davison, did you say that you had no objection to being a common carrier pipeline? Is that?
Well, we prefer not to be. It's not necessary under the law. This has been under some discussion with the DNR. The law does provide for our operation separately of common carrier status.
Thanks for the explanation. Okay, thank you, Mr. Teal. Is there any other questions of the witness? Representative Pierce has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Teal, have you had an opportunity to look at the memorandum from Mark Wooster to Kay Brown dated March 19th? And its subject is Yukon Pacific's letter on Senate Bill 309.
I think I have it in front of me. I've only had a few minutes and really have been listening rather than reading. But we're sympathetic to Yukon Pacific, and if this language has been, we have an opposition.
Mr. Teal, I have a specific question for you, and I'd like to go ahead and give you the question. If you would rather read the memo thoroughly and then come back and answer it at a later date. I understand this is being held over, but my question concerns the bottom paragraph on page one, in which Mr. Wooster says, and I quote, more explicitly, had Phillips Marathon Union and NSTAR really felt their litigation chances to be so favorable, they would not have all entered into settlements so clearly favorable to the state. I am assuming that he is, of course, referring to the settlements earlier last year. I wonder if you're prepared to speak on whether or not that is indeed why you entered into those settlements, or whether you would rather wait until a later time.
Actually, I'm going to say we have no knowledge of not seeing what you just read from. We have no knowledge of that. We could respond if we get a chance to see what it is, but we don't have it here.
Mark's up there, isn't he? Hey. Hey. Mark is up there.
Right.
Mr. Wooster is there in Anchorage, I understand. Mark, do you have a copy of that memo that you can give to Mr. Teal so that Mr. Teal can answer it at a later time?
Yes, I do. I will make copies available.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Teal, and we'll make sure that we get those your testimony from the Senate and provide that to the members of the committee.
All right, thank you very much.
You bet. Next, we have in Anchorage Bill Nickman, I believe.
This is Bill Hickman with NSTAR. I'm just here with Dale to respond to questions that might be asked. I haven't read that particular memorandum, but I could respond with some disagreement. The litigation that we were concerned about was with Minerals and Management Services, a federal agency, and the settlement with the state was a required settlement by the state in exchange for their participation in that settlement. It didn't reflect our evaluation of our court position in the state matter.
Mike, can I follow up?
Go right ahead.
Mr. Hickman, this is Drew Pierce. So there were, the state made, how could the state make it a requirement of you that you settle with the state before you could settle the federal case? Can you explain that a little bit further, please?
The state had filed as a party in the federal case, and since they had an interest through revenue sharing from MMS, share of the royalties from the field, MMS required that the state sign off on the settlement. And the state refused to sign off on the settlement unless we would agree to settle the state dispute at the same time. Our DNR refused to sign off on the MMS settlement unless we accepted the settlement with the state at the same time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bill Hickman, for your questions, your answers. Larry, you've been very patient back there. I believe you're next on the agenda to testify. And part of the reason why I didn't say the best for last or anything, but some of these people were from out of town.
No problem,
but thank you
Mr.
for your
Chairman.
Patience.
My name is Larry Vavra, and I represent UNICAL, and we appreciate this opportunity to submit testimony on Senate Bill 309. I guess I should say Committee Substitute 309. The subject of royalty gas valuation sort of seems like an old friend since I've spent so much time discussing it with this committee. This whole confrontation has been brought about by a bad decision made last spring by the Department of Natural Resources when they noticed the producers that the state's royalty share of natural gas would be valued at $2.05 per MCF, regardless of what the contract price of any sale was. They have now come to realize just how bad the decision they made was last spring for the producers, the utility company, and the consumers. We have observed DNR dance around this decision as the hue and cry from the consumers and utility companies increased. First, the committee substitute to accommodate Chugach Electric. That, however, left out NSTAR. So, a new committee substitute to accommodate NSTAR. That, however, failed to consider the North Slope gas line. So, a new committee substitute also providing for utilizing the sale price for the royalty value. Only one minor group has been left out, the in-state industrial consumer. May we presume this was an oversight and that discriminating against the private sector was accidental? What we have observed here is a reluctance on the part of DNR to admit their decision was incorrect and accept Senate Bill 309 in its original form. Instead, they have approached the problem with an armload of band-aids, patching here and there, until they have almost returned to our original contention. The sale price is the value for royalty purposes. DNR's original contention that they had to get the most for the resources they monitor has indeed been watered down by their own doing. Their insistence that the maximum revenue be collected regardless of the sale price has been eroded away by provisions to which they have agreed. When you suddenly see that the sale price is the appropriate valuation for one group after another, why not treat all groups alike? This legislature can end this charade and tie the royalty value to the contract price by passing House Bill 425 or Senate Bill 309 without the DNR cut and paste we've seen. This would lower utility rates for electric users below the proposed DNR Chugach settlement and return the rates to the Chugach long-term contract price. Excuse me. DNR has argued that 205 is an appropriate valuation for natural gas prices. Unocal Petrochemical Plant in North Kenai is presently operating at about 50% capacity due to the depressed world market and our inability to compete. Let's take a look at what the competition is paying for their natural gas. Argentina, 50 cents an MCF. Indonesia, 60 cents an MCF. Qatar, 50 cents an MCF. Saudi, 50 cents an MCF. Trinidad, 90 cents an MCF, with an average 60 cents an MCF. Now I ask you, what would you predict the outcome to be if the state persists in its contention that the state's share of the natural gas is worth $2.05 an MCF? One of the few companies processing in-state and exporting Alaska's natural resources is being penalized by the state. At this time, we do not need disincentives to help us compete in the world market, where we are unable to pass on to the consumer the state's price increase. I thank you, and I will answer any questions members of the committee might have.
Representative Samansky.
Thank you. Maybe it's more of a comment, but it may be a question. The I guess what's bothered me, and I think you touched on it, and it was part of the previous testimony, and when we first started down this trail, I guess it was almost a year ago now, people were looking for various compromises and trying to figure out how you could deal with the consumer side of it and so forth. And I think that you make a compelling argument that what we've slowly but surely done is allowed one end to feed, and then we said, well, now we got one end at the supper table, bring another one in to feed, then another one. But I don't know why we shouldn't let you in to feed now. I mean, we've opened the door. We've compromised ourselves, and to a certain degree, I'm not too sure we've co-opted ourselves with regard to the original policy question. And it's hard for me to continue to find any fault in your argument, because the bottom line is we've progressively chiseled away on this thing and got to the point where why should we make it? I can't think of a logical reason why you shouldn't be exempted too. And I assume we wouldn't hear any more from you if you were included in here.
Is that a question?
All right. Is that right?
That was a Samansky question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samansky, I would prefer not to be included in here as an exception. Our contention is, as it has been for some time, that the value of the revenue is whatever the sale price happens to be for the gas. And I couldn't agree more that, you know, we started out with a fairly difficult thing to defend here. Excuse me, when DNR said they are obligated under the law to get the maximum value they could the resources they monitor. And suddenly, well, except for this group and except for that group and except for some other group. And before you know it, we find that credibility-wise, we got a problem here. And it gets down to the nitty-gritty. The thing is, I think you could make a very convincing argument that why are we fooling with all this paper? Why don't we just go back to the original bill and say, whatever the sale price is, that's the value, and let's leave it at that. Granted, the Chugach contract may be too low by their standards at the present time. The Chugach contract is going to run out eventually, and I'm sure it'll be negotiated or renegotiated at a higher value. Yet that's, I think I used an example here some weeks ago about the guy supplying firewood, and I think that still applies.
Representative Sun had a question, then Representative Pierce.
Well, comment one, you could go back to the sale price. You could just go back and accept DNR's evaluation and decision and let it go at that, too. But my question is, in your union plan up there, what is the price of, you cited all the prices of fuel or gas around the world. What's the price in Kenai that union pays?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sund, we have been using a weighted average of all of our contracts there. I think you were absent at a previous meeting. We discussed this. We've taken into consideration the weighted average of all the contracts, and it works out something like 61 cents.
Do you offhand know what the high and the low of that weighted average is?
I'm sorry, I don't have that information. No, I don't.
205 and 230.
32
and 26.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions, Mr. Vonger. First of all, on Representative Sun's point, when was the last time that price your plan, 61 cents, was renegotiated? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pierce, I believe that information was contained in a DNR handout here, and I think it was 81 or 82. I'm not sure.
So it's been fairly recent?
Yes.
Okay, my second question would be the same memo that I asked Mr. Thiel and Mr. Hickman about from Mr. Wooster to Kay Brown. Have you had an opportunity to read that memo?
No, I have not had an opportunity to read that memo other than having heard it read earlier in your question.
Are you prepared to answer my question? The question is, Mr. Wooster says, more explicitly, had Phillips Marathon Union and NSTAR really felt their litigation chances to be so favorable, they would not have all entered into settlements so clearly favorable to the state. Do you agree?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pearson, no, I do not agree with that. I explained earlier to the committee that our compelling reason to settle at that particular time with MMS was the requirement to post $100 million cash, interest-free money, with the feds, which would have been distributed. And a business decision to settle a thing for substantially less than that seemed like a prudent approach at the time. However, I might add that was before DNR offered to settle with several other entities at substantially less than 205. And had we known that at that time, I think our decision would have been much different.
Thank you.
Okay, Rep. Sam Cotton.
Yeah, Larry. I've been over this so many times, I think I've forgotten some of the original things that were presented here. But the case that Larry Markley referred to was Chugach versus State of Alaska, and that's the one that's still in court. Is that right? That was the one that squabbled over whether it was contract price or prevailing price?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cotton, I believe there are some half a dozen cases still pending in court.
They've been put on hold now while these negotiations have taken place. So is union involved in any of those cases?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative, we do have litigation pending. When we settled, we only settled our differences on the Kenai gas field, which is only one field down in the Cook Inlet area.
So really, if the legislature wasn't involved in this, it would just basically go back to court and Chugach, union, other interested parties would try to settle it with the judicial branch of government rather than the legislative branch. Is that a fair statement?
That's accurate.
So it seems like your contention is that that's what they meant originally, was that the contract price is the prevailing price or should be the current price of 26 cents. What I'm trying to get to is, why don't you just go back to court? I mean, it sounds like you'd have a, if you really believe you'd win.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cotton, for 25 years, the contract price was the royalty value for all intents and purposes, and suddenly DNR has pulled this rabbit out of the hat and says, hey, but we want 205.
So you sued, and you, and
that's
and,
true.
So, but what, well, would the court, I mean, how soon do you think the court would rule on that, or?
3 years, 5 years.
Oh, you think it would take that long?
I would anticipate it would be somewhere between 3.5 and 5 years, and I'm here to point out to the members of the legislature that I think probably have a significant interest in the goings-on, that not only is this a consumer-oriented issue, this is an extremely job-related issue as far as my company is concerned and as far as that chemical plant is concerned in North Kenai.
Well, that's obviously an important issue that is it's a side issue, but it's obviously very important. And I don't know that we really fully understand that as far as how many jobs are at stake as a direct result of the situation. I don't know if you'd venture a number on that for us.
I think we employ somewhere between 400 and 500 people at that plant.
So you're saying that there's up to 500 jobs directly related to this issue? That I if think it didn't go your way, those 500 people will be out of work. That's what I'm trying to get to.
I can't promise you that the plant will close if we're not successful in this.
Never mind.
At this point, we're running at 50% capacity.
Sorry. I don't really mean to pursue that, because I don't think you really meant that there was 500 people going to lose their job if you didn't win this issue. That's not what you're saying. What happens if you go to court, though? I guess I already asked that question, so I'll wait and ask the Department of Law how long they expect it, something like that, to take.
Representative Rue, I believe, was next, and then Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry, I don't think I was able to hear your firewood example when you gave it. Since I used to be in the firewood business, I sure appreciate it if you could maybe run it by us again.
Mr. Chairman, with your leave. Representative Maru, I believe it was something to the extent that I had a contract to cut firewood on state land and agreed to supply a buyer for X amount per cord, and it turned out to be an extremely difficult winter, and the price of firewood went up a substantial amount, and everyone else was charging more. And it seemed unreasonable for the state to come to me and tell me that I was going to have to pay them a higher percentage of their whatever they were charging me to cut wood on their land, as long as I was locked into this contract with this particular buyer. And it seems we've got a similar situation here, that you've got an entity that, well, for 25 years things progressed along, and suddenly they said, well, we think that the price of firewood should be $205 instead of whatever the prevailing contract price is, and we have a problem with that.
Another question, Mr. Chairman, just on that point, but it seems to me that it went for 25 years because there was very little difference between the contract price of all the contracts, and all of a sudden people started paying more for gas. I mean, isn't that what occurred?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sun, yes, very much so. In fact, at the time that the first contract was executed, the gas was worth nothing. We'd been burning it for years, just flaring it to get rid of this stuff because it's dangerous. And we took it upon ourselves to make a substantial investment in a petrochemical plant in Kenai. And at that point in time, the gas then did have a value. Previous to that, until you've got a buyer for your gas, it's a real nuisance.
But I mean, this went on for 25 years, and you say all of a sudden DOT zinged off into Never Never Land and came up with this price. I mean, they came up with that price because other people were paying that price for gas. I mean, they looked at the market and said, you know, I don't think the state went out and made the contract.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sun, the other people that are paying that price, that clause troubles me a little bit. NSTAR entered into a contract to supply themselves and their peak demand. And the Beluga field, which is presently under contention between Chugach and DNR, I believe Chugach has some 95% of that field, and their contract price is 26 cents. NSTAR has the remaining 4 to 5%, and their contract price is $205. So I think the gentleman from Homer Electric pointed out that you know, the prevailing value in the beluga field should be 38 cents, and he's questioned where they came up with 205.
I'd like to wrap this meeting up, but there's several more questions. Representative Szymanski, I believe, is next, and then Representative Pierce.
Appreciate it. A couple quick ones. Are you in any type of negotiations now with Cook Inlet Region to look at the LNG plant possibilities in Kenai area?
Mr. Chairman, no, not at the present time. To my knowledge, we're not. In fact, I mentioned to the Chugach representative, until this problem gets resolved with the state reevaluating Royalty Gas, they're going to have probably the same problem that Mr. Treadwell has with negotiating any contract to sell something when they don't really know what the value is going to be on down the road.
Well, with your indulgence, let me kind of switch over, if I could, just ask that same question of Kay and ask whether or not they've ever done an analysis or an assessment as to what the potential impact of LNG development in the Kenai area is related to this reprice, this new price valuation and reopening of prices. Question, Kay.
Thank you. Could you restate the first part of the question?
I think it's been fairly well publicized that Cook Inlet Region and what I understood to be several gas producers have been looking at LNG development in the Kenai area, the marketing, the infrastructure, the development of facilities down there. What impact, if any, does this action taken by DNR last year on reevaluation or repricing and then this legislation have on that, if any, from your perspective? Does it enhance their opportunity to develop LNG and export gas, or does it detract from it, or does it have no effect at all?
We received a letter from Cook Inlet Region, I believe it was a year ago last fall, where they advised us that they were looking into this and that at some point they would be interested in being a royalty gas purchaser. Mark Wooster may have some comments on what effects he would see. In this discussion, as it's gone on in the last few months, SERI has not indicated that the action is a problem from their perspective with the development of that project, that it either enhanced or detracted. But I'd also like to see if Mark had any thoughts on that issue.
I'll do it, Mark.
I haven't heard any real comment about the impact of the bill from SERI on this issue. They have, from time to time, and even within the last few weeks, reiterated their interest in possibly negotiating to buy in-kind royalty gas if they ever do make the project work, but it's always been in a general sense like that. But there's been no, I don't think there's been any particular attention given to the impact of this legislation on such a project, and they certainly have made no comment to me on it.
Is that something your office, Kay, can look at or get me some type of a feedback on? Because I know that they've at least publicized that they're doing feasibility study and so forth, and it just seems to me that that's a pertinent issue related to this, using that as an example as to where we're going to move in the future with regard to existing gas operations and then future gas operations.
Yes, sir, we'll look into that.
Thank you, Kay. We have a few more people, I guess, who would have some questions. And Representative Pierce was next, and Representative Rue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barber, perhaps I should have asked this of the NSTAR people when they were testifying, but I'll ask it of you because you're the one who mentioned it. You said that the 205 contract that NSTAR signed in the Beluga field was a peaking contract. Can you tell us what a peaking contract is, and how is that different from the contracts that Chugach had?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Toward your heads.
Toward me?
No.
Or toward you. The peaking contract, for example, would be something the demand as far as natural gas in the wintertime, is substantially greater than it is in the summertime. In fact, even to the extent we supply the city of Anchorage with, actually NSTAR, we supply them with most of their natural gas. When the weather is particularly difficult, it's necessary for us to cut back the supply that we give to our chemical plant in order to supply the city of Anchorage. To cover yourself, to avoid a situation like that in the event that we actually had to terminate the service to the chemical plant in order to supply Anchorage and we're still short, suppose we had a problem with some wells or a problem with a pipeline, you'd enter into another contract to cover these peak periods where you probably wouldn't agree to take the same period or the same amount of gas month after month. But during peak periods, during the winter, you take a substantial amount, say, for during the cold snap, and then cut it back.
Is peak gas inherently more expensive than regular gas?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pierce, I don't know that you can make a distinction other than the fact that when you're trying to supply yourself with some royalty gas just for a specific period of time, you'd probably be willing to pay more for it, and in fact, than a normal supply contract that would exist over a long haul.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to wrap it up too. Sure. I Representative Rue had a question, then Representative Sun.
Yeah, I followed your suggestion here.
Yeah. No.
And on CSSB 309 rules on page 2 under subsection AA under section 2 and page 3 under subsection BB, I've replaced the words gas with the word firewood, and it gives a whole other meaning to this thing. And that begins to make me see how silly this whole mess is with regard to the state getting involved and fiddling around with the price, which was established many years ago. And it really is amazing when you replace one word, gas, with the one word, firewood, that the meaning is entirely different, although we're still talking about heat. We're still talking about BTUs or whatever you want to call it. But the meaning is entirely different, and it just, in my opinion, as I've already said, makes it show how silly the state's action has been. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll take one final question, and hopefully it's not about firewood, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to bring the timber industry into this, Mr. Chairman, but now that we're on our way. I would just like a question to, perhaps to Kay and I guess the Chugach guys left here, but a bigger question that I wasn't going to bring up till later on is the impact of the lower cost gas in terms of production of electricity and how that impacts the Bradley Lake Hydro Project. And I think there's going to have a major effect there in that we're going to provide long-term low-cost gas, and that could bring electricity to the bus at about 3 cents or less. And the projected cost for the Bradley Lake Hydro is about at the bus is about 6 cents. And I don't see anybody, if they can't handle a $2.50 per month increase in their electric bill off of this gas deal, how anybody in the rail belt's going to accept a 100% increase from 3 cents to 6 cents at the bus for high